Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650, Friday edition of the show. We're live from the Kintec studio. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. The Bridge Street Dunbar Lumber in Ladner has moved to Progress Way in Tilbury's Industrial Park. More room, more product, more awesome details at dunbarlumber.com. Send your texts in. We'll get to some of them in the back half of the show for sure. But now joining us on the phone, he's a former NHL player and a regular contributor here on 650. You also see him on the panel on Sportsnet Canucks broadcasts. He is Landon Ferraro. Landon, how's it going, man?
I'm doing pretty good, guys. How you doing?
We're doing very well here. And, you know, Canucks have won three in a row. A lot to get into, but I want to start with the uglier side of last night's game, which is, of course, the Tanner Jeannot hit on Brock Besser. And, you know, just from your perspective as a former NHL player, a former pro, like, what goes through your mind instantly when you see Jeannot level that hit on Brock Besser?
Are you asking as me as a teammate of Brock Besser?
Or just, well, you can do that, but also just, like, now with your experience, right? Like, because, you know, I sit here as somebody who's never played the game at that level, obviously, and I think, man, that's ugly, and that's the reaction I've seen mostly. Like, what's your reaction when you see it?
I mean, personally, I don't like it at all, and to the point where it, you know, it really gives me a bit of a pit in the stomach. It's, you know, I had my own concussion issues through my career and had a big one my last year, and it was definitely a big part of my reason to retire. So, you know, I definitely look at it as something that just doesn't need to be there. It's one thing when the hit happens and it's a quick play and, you know, it's just the game moves quick. It happens sometimes. It's brutal to see, but, you know, bad things happen at high pace. But these ones where they're completely avoidable, like, that's a choice by Jeannot to run him right through and make sure it gets up high. Like, he already has him in a vulnerable position. If he puts his shoulder down and goes right through his chest or his shoulder, he's still going to hit him hard. Like, Brock Besser's going to feel that. But it's a clean check. Like, that's a choice that he made, and it's the wrong one.
Yeah, the high principal contact of the head and the fact that it was so avoidable was what stuck out to me. I know there's been some discussion in this market. There often is after a hit like that. Like, where was the response from sort of old school hockey heads? What's your view on how a team should handle when that happens? Like, so to put you back in the teammate position, Landon, how should a teammates respond when a hit like that comes out? And is it enough to go out and just win the game?
I think it, again, goes to how your team is built and how they are in the room. And, you know, you also look at who was on the ice there. Like, you know, no one's really wanting to see Quinn Hughes be the first one to jump in there. And he was the closest one to it and gave him a little cross check. And, you know, Hronek's really the only one that was on the ice that probably could. You know, I was always someone that jumped in quick. Probably not for the best things, because they got beat up a lot because of it. But, I don't know. It was just always a reaction that way. But at the same time, you know, you can't force one of your smaller guys to go jump a pretty big player.
Yeah.
I think the Canucks responded incredibly well, though. Like, they didn't, they didn't go running around and try and take 20 people's heads off and get in fights, but they were consistently on the body and they just played the game the correct way and they got the win. At the end of the day, you know, Brock Besser knows his teammates care about him and his teammates know that he's a massive part of the team. You need to do what's best.
Yeah, and I think the other part of this equation, right, is that the referees got things right in the moment, which, you know, as you said, there was no one on the ice necessarily who was well-suited to jump in and play that role. If Jeannot had been allowed to stay in the game, then we're probably having a different conversation. But the refs got it right in the moment. I think that makes it a lot easier for the Canucks players to simply go out and focus on, okay, we're going to play physical, but we're going to try to win this game first and foremost.
I agree completely. Like, the refs have their job every single night, and, you know, for the most part, it's to make sure the play is fair and you're making your calls where they are. But when something like this incident happens, like, that's when the refs are there to shine. Like, they have to make sure they make the right call. You know, there's a reason as well that LA wasn't really fired up about it as well. right? Like, you can argue as much as you want, but at the same, like, you know it's a bad hit. Like, if I'm sitting there on that LA bench and you see your teammate go make that hit, yeah, you're hoping they somehow only call it two, but you know what happened.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's right there in front of you. And I always like to, you know, always just bring it back to, if that was done on the other way around, what am I expecting? Well, I'd expect the guy to get kicked out. But the refs made the right call, and it sizzles it out right away, and then the game can continue from there.
Landon, when you think about this road trip, right, the three games, two opponents that I think we expect the Canucks to beat, and then another team that, you know, looks playoff caliber in the West in the early going, and you consider sort of where this team was at the outset, right, where you know, Carolina had come in and skated them, you know, not off the ice. They hung around and got a point, but had looked like the superior team. And then, of course, the Devils had sort of put the boot in. What does a confidence-building road trip like this sort of mean for a team at this stage of the season?
It's just the, you know, like, you know, actually understanding that, okay, this is what our game is, this is what it looks like, and not only that, but when we play the correct style that the Canucks are built for, which last night was, as, you know, as close as we've seen it this year, really, is, like, it just builds that confidence of, okay, we need to continue on now, right? Like, we stuck with it when it wasn't going well, and we're now being rewarded. That's not a time to take, you know, your foot off the gas a bit. Like, this is where you really buckle down because you're seeing the results, and it's hard to put win streaks together. So when things are clicking in that sense, like, you need to take full advantage.
Yeah, no doubt. And as you said, I think that was really the kind of most impressive defensive performance we've seen from the Canucks. The most they've looked like their identity from last year, I think, was that one against the Kings last night. And of course, you know, the other storyline coming out of that one, or one of the other storylines, was another dominant performance from Quinn Hughes. And, you know, we're almost running out of ways to sing his praises here, because he's just been so good and so dominant this season. Can you remember seeing a stretch like this from an NHL defenseman, where it's not just the points, but it is the way he is impacting the game almost in every possible form every time he's out there on the ice for a stretch of games like this? It's hard to recall other similar examples.
Like, the only one that really comes to my head, and it might just be because I was in my, you know, more of my teenage years, and that's when you're really watching it all, but like Shea Weber when he was, you know, Nashville and moving on to Montreal, like the way that he could physically take over a game. He had that bomb from the point, but even saying that, like the way that Quinn Hughes can skate and move and open up lanes for himself to shoot. But not only that, like that beautiful play to DeBrusque last night on the back door, like the amount of hockey IQ and vision to be able to pull that off is just, it's really stupid, really. Like, I'm trying to come up with a better word, but like, it's just crazy what he's able to do.
You brought up the DeBrusque goal. He's now scored in three straight, Landon. It's not just that he's scoring, though. Five shots on goal yesterday. He has nine across the three games on this road trip, where he finally sort of found the back of the net and then kept finding the back of the net. If you look at it from the second period of that loss to Philly in Vancouver, I'm talking game two of the season, through to the start of this road trip, he had nine shots on goal across however many games that was. I think it was 10 games. And now he's got nine in three. What's permitting him, in your view, to be sort of testing goaltenders at a heavier rate the last week?
I think he's just getting more comfortable, really. Like, it's, we always forget how hard it is when you change organizations. And once you've changed a few times, it gets easier and easier. But, you know, he's spent his whole career in Boston. It's been, you know, basically one type of play, like one type of system throughout. And when you switch, like, it is a very big change. So I think it's just taken a bit of time. But if you look at how he's scored in the past couple of years, and then just looking at last night, like, the play of, you know, again, it's an amazing play off Quinn Hughes when he enters in on the right side and pulls up and hits DeBrusque coming in. Like, that's the type of secondary wave that you see DeBrusque scoring from in the past. And, like, you start seeing those parts of his game start to come in. He's starting to be more comfortable of where, when other players have the puck, what their tendencies are, so he knows where to show up at the right time. Like, he's just starting to get comfortable and fitting in with the team. And the best part is it seems like, you know, the three goals he's had here in the last bit here, they're getting nicer and nicer, so I can't wait to see what the next one's going to look like.
Yeah, that one last night, too, the patience to outwait Kemper and tuck it in was really impressive. And, you know, the word that always comes up with Jake DeBrusk is streaky, right? He's a streaky scorer. You know, I think part of that is if you're a 25-goal guy, like, naturally there's going to be some droughts throughout the course of a season. You're not going to pot one every other game or every three games or anything like clockwork. But, you know, in your experience, is there more to it than that? Like, are some guys legitimately just more streaky? And hey, once they start getting one or two, all of a sudden the dam opens for a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, some guys, that's just how it is. Like, I was a streaky guy, especially in the American League. And, you know, you go on 10-game stretches where you get 12 or 13 goals, and then you don't touch that sheet for a while. But the best, or not the best, but the whole part of being a pro and being able to do it at that, you know, at the tip top level is when you're not streaking, like, what can you bring to the team to still really be a part of it and still provide some added boost game to game. And for DeBrusk, it's solid play. You always know you're going to get his effort. He's good on the boards. He can make plays out of his own end and try and move it around the other end as well with some speed. But, you know, he does a good job of, you know, and I feel like it's starting to come into his game more here as he's gotten comfortable where, you know, even when he doesn't show up in the score sheet, there's some plays every night where you're like, oh, you know, that was another really good one. It was solid, right?
Yeah, and sort of what was interesting for me there, Landon, watching him play, was I felt like at the start we had it, and then it almost, there were genuinely quiet games, right? Like, there were genuinely quiet games from him for a stretch there, and seemed like maybe some like uncharacteristic decision making, even on little things, just like where he was shooting from. And now it's sort of back to being, even whether he's getting a shot, whether he's touching the puck or not, at least like the disciplined going to the net, being in dangerous areas. And then now the shots are coming too, but it did feel like there was a lull there. Is that something that can happen as those sort of cold streaks go on?
I mean, it can definitely be a part of it, but honestly, like, I would put that back to being on a new team for the first time. Like, it's almost like you're coming back from an injury when you've been out for a while. Like, your first one or two games generally are pretty good because you have so much energy and you're so excited. And then that kind of burns out.
Right.
And then you got to figure out your actual game again. So, like, for him, I feel, you know, that little excitement burst at the beginning burnt out a bit. And then he was, not only that, but, you know, the lines were getting shuffled all over the place for that first while. Like, nothing was really easy for him. And now that the team has started to, you know, get more even keel, and they've been, you know, taking steady steps moving forward to, you know, towards last night, where it was a very good game, you could see his game start to build back up. It took a bit longer than, you know, I imagine he would like and everyone else would, but, you know, it's there for him again, and I feel like we'll get that more consistent play, whether it's streaky scoring, but when it's not there, we'll get that consistent play.
So, Landon, the Canucks open a 6-game homestand tomorrow, playoff rematch against the Edmonton Oilers. And I know you follow the Oilers really closely as well. And, you know, it's another, not like it was last year, but another slow start out of the gates for the Oilers. They're still just a hair below NHL 500. And, you know, I don't think there's any real cause for concern when it comes to playoffs or anything like that. But are there kind of any legitimate red flags you see in the Oilers game that could prevent them from being Stanley Cup contenders again that you've seen in the early going here?
Well, I mean, there's a couple things right now for sure in Edmonton that, you know, they're not quite as smooth as they would like them to be. You know, on the back end, they're still trying to figure out, you know, their pairings and you know, what they have back there. It hasn't been, you know, as as good as they thought it was going to be. So they're trying to work that out with a bunch of new players, on the, especially on the right side. But, the biggest thing right now for the Oilers is they're starting to put together more complete games like they had against Vegas the other night. But there's still glaring mistakes that pop up that, you know, are costing them. Like, that game had no business being done in regulation. Mm. You know, it was, you know, the puck goes back, it's under a minute left, and everyone moves to the bench side. I believe it was Dreisaitl and Arvidsson were the forwards as well. Instead of just coming back through the middle and just stopping there, then that Barbashev would never have made that pass if someone was standing in the middle. But, like, you could almost see it was deer in the headlights when he picked his head up, because it was only Hanifin standing over there, right? So where the Canucks have done a better job of, you know, limiting their odd man rushes in the last little bit here, because that was kind of seemed to be their biggest issue. You know, the Oilers just haven't found a way to mentally stay in it, to stop really just shooting themselves in the foot, because, again, they've played well enough to win, but there's something, you know, one or two things every night that really cost them.
The Oilers are also kind of struggling to score and kind of struggling on the power play. I'm always fascinated when it's a team that I'm very confident is great at something that's massively struggling at it for a month or more. Landon, to see sort of going into Saturday's game, it's like, is it a good sign that, hey, look, the Oilers, some of their best weapons, the way that they can skate you off the ice, the way that that power play can hurt you, that's not quite in form yet, versus sort of the other side of it, where you know at some point it's going nuke, and you just hope it doesn't go off against you?
Yeah, like, that's the scary part with their power play. Like, it's sitting well below, towards the bottom of the league. I know before their last game in Vegas, they were sitting in 26th, and I don't know the number right now, but, you know, it's just disjointed, and nothing's moving as fluid. Like, if I were to ask you, you know, to describe their power play, you know, through the second half and playoffs last year, I would imagine you would say, like, you couldn't tell where one person was supposed to be on the ice other than Bouchard at the top.
Yeah.
Like, everyone else was interchangeable. Like, that's not happening right now. So, yes, that pop can easily be there because they have McDavid and Dreisaitl. They can just, you know, it could just turn on at any moment. But the foundation has been kind of cracked a bit, and they need to build that back up before they're going to get something moving there. But, you know, we can talk about the power play, but their PK has not been very good either. It's sitting, well, it was worst in the NHL, right? So, like, there's holes in their game right now where the Canucks, you know, as they're kind of trending upwards, like, this is a statement game for them that, you know, they can really put themselves, not, I don't want to say on the map, because they're a good team and everyone knows that, but just that, like, internal confidence of, like, we can run this team when we play them tomorrow night. Like, we can run the game if we play the way we should.
The other thing that I'm curious to see is, I think Edmonton's lost a fair bit of speed since we saw them in the playoffs. And you know, on the list of things I'm worried about with the Oilers, like missing the playoffs, 0 out of 10, right? Their power play, 1 out of 10, maybe. You know what I mean? But the fact that with McLeod, Holloway, Broberg having departed, it just doesn't look like they have that warp speed element to the depth minutes that they had as they got really scary down the stretch and in the playoffs last season. Do you see that when you watch them play, or do you share my concerns about the Oilers' speed game?
Yeah, and we've talked about it over at Edmonton doing the pre and post games of, like, Edmonton this year is not going to be, you know, take out, obviously, McDavid and the couple guys that absolutely fly on the team, but as a whole, like, they're not going to be a speed burst team all over the place. Like, the way that they're, you know, they need to play is, like, they need to be team fast. And what that means is, like, all your passes have to be tape to tape. You need to know where the next player is going to be so that you can, as soon as you get it, you can advance the puck and get moving. Like, the puck's always going to move faster than the player. And they've had some games this year where they have been very connected as a five-man group, and they advance up the ice very quickly. But as soon as one of those passes are off, well, now all of a sudden, like, there's no speed left. So, know, that's where, as you're playing them, like, you need to make sure that your gaps are good. You need to make sure your forwards are coming back through the middle, because as much as you can clog up all of their plays through the middle of the ice, that's a way that you can really, really slow the Edmonton Oilers down.
Landon, man, always appreciate it. Thanks for chatting with us, and should be a good one. I expect there to be a little bit of extra intensity, for regular season game number 14 or whatever, for this playoff rematch tomorrow. Hopefully it's a fun one.
Yeah, it should be awesome. It's always good when these two teams meet up, yeah. So we'll see how it goes.
Thanks, Landon.
Yep, have a good one.
That is Landon Ferraro, former NHL player and, of course, Sportsnet Canucks analyst here on 650, and you see him on TV as well. And an interesting point, and I know this was something you were concerned about from an Edmonton perspective too, right, after the losses you mentioned, just the overall impact on their team speed and just the depth of their team a little bit as well, right? Like, you know, Vasily Podkolzin, and good for him, but he's playing top 6 minutes for this team right now, right? And again, good for him, but it's that's a noticeable decrease in the quality of the depth that they compared to what they were running out last year.
Yeah, I mean, I liked of their offseason moves, I liked that bet a lot more than I liked the other ones, right? But do you remember the reaction when they did the Ryan McLeod
yes.
trade, and people were like celebrating in the streets that they got this difference? Like, what are we talking about? That's honestly one of the weirdest consensus hockey Twitter takes in a long time, and there have been many.
It was not Carter. So who? Matt
Savoy.
Yeah. It was because he was a first-round pick, right?
Yeah, he's got 6 points in 10 AHL games. Sick.
Yeah, there you go.
Ryan McLeod's playing top 9 minutes and doing a sick job defensively, albeit with some, gaps in his game, right? Like, he's not a perfect player, but he's exactly what the Oilers need. Defensively responsible third line center who can also play wing in your top six and complement Dreisaitl well. Like, sounds like something you could use.
It's the Canucks and the Oilers at Rogers Arena tomorrow. That'll be a fun one. It's also the start of a 6-game homestand for the Vancouver Canucks. So we can look ahead a little bit about to that game, more at the homestand. There's some other talking points coming out of last night as well to get into. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. So any questions or thoughts or comments that you have about the Canucks, hit us up with them. We got a full open hour for the final hour of the show. So we can dive into the inbox, take some of your questions here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650 with Jamie Dodd and Thomas Drantz. We are live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. We can get into some of your texts here over the last hour of the show. But, we spent a lot of time, obviously, on the whiteboard talking about the result against the LA Kings, about Quinn Hughes' performance, the hit on Brock Besser, all of that, the overall defensive performance from the team against the LA Kings and on that California road trip in general. But, a couple of other more individual player points coming out of that one. And, starting in goal where, Kevin Lankinen, another really solid performance in net. He played all three games on that California road trip. I would be absolutely flabbergasted if he did not start against Edmonton. That would be one of the most baffling goaltending decisions we've ever seen here in Vancouver if that wasn't the case.
High bar. You're talking about the city of Schneider in game six.
Yep.
You're talking about the city of Addie Lack over in the Heritage Classic.
This would be up there.
Yeah,
that would be a special one.
You're talking about the city where just this spring we saw Artur Shilov start game three of the playoffs game four of the playoffs.
Well, he started game three and then DeSmith was good to go for game four and they're like,
That's
no, we're
right.
leaving him in.
And it was
he just ran with it.
Yeah. But it was the Man, I feel like game three was DeSmith's career game.
Maybe.
Yeah, because DeSmith loses game two, and then he has that incredible game three.
Yes.
And then game four, it's Shelov's, and everyone's like, what is happening?
Yeah.
So we've had some stunners, man. I don't know. Shelov's getting.
I still think I'm right.
You might be, man. You might be. But
just given the usage pattern and the opponent and the spot.
What usage pattern?
Is, you know, you're just, like, you can have A B patterns, or like, is is that a pattern? Just all A's.
Yeah. The
does that qualify as a pattern?
There is no pattern. There is just hit the Kevin Lankinen button and hit it early and often.
So Lankinen, look, it's a great story for the Canucks, right? You get this guy in, what, like after training camp?
Yeah.
At the end of training camp, and he comes in, he's giving you an incredible performance over the early part of the season. He's stabilizing an extremely important position.
And we were, you know, I've talked about it a lot, right? But watching training camp and being like, I'm worried about the Canucks in goal. Hey. And then walking to like Subway to get a wrap and seeing the news come through that they'd signed Lankinen. And just thinking, oh man, this is massive. They needed this so desperately. And now, fast forward, and it's like Tolopilo's struggling in Abbotsford. Patera's struggling in Abbotsford. Shelov's is struggling in Vancouver. Like, if they didn't have Lankinen, this could have been a very interesting
first few weeks
of Canucks hockey.
And instead, they've gotten really good goaltending overall.
He's been awesome.
Yeah, he's been so good. It is interesting to me, though, the question of, like, what the next 3 to 4 weeks look like in the crease for the Canucks, and when do we see Shelov's again? They play Edmonton on Saturday. That's going to be Lankinen. Then they've got 2 days off, and then next week, Calgary Tuesday, Islanders Thursday, Chicago Saturday, and then a home back-to-back Chicago-Nashville Saturday and Sunday.
Get ready to stop some Connor Bedard shots, Artur Shelov's.
Do you give him the Calgary game?
No. No, I don't think so.
Right, because it's 2 days off, so you say, okay, we're playing Lankinen a lot, but we haven't seen any slippage left. There's no travel. He gets the 2 days off to recover.
Do you want to, like, symbolically let him exercise the demons of the first game of the season against Calgary, or do you just
That's not a bad idea.
Or do you just want to... That's not a bad idea. You're like, I can get on board with an exorcism.
Absolutely. Okay, love buddy. An exorcism.
Man, that is wild.
That was Jim Houston before Game 7, right? Great day for an exorcism?
It was,
against the Chicago?
Good job, William Friedkin. So... you play him against the divisional opponents. Lankinen gets both divisional opponents here because you want to win against both divisional opponents. Like, at some
Who cares about Calgary?
I mean, I agree with you, but also Calgary came back and beat the Canucks opening night.
That's true. That's true.
And they've chugged along. Like, I was definitively wrong. I'm ready to capitulate. There's no world in which Calgary is in the same tier as the Anaheim Ducks anyway. That team's playing good hockey. They are not this. Are they going to sustain? Are they going to make the playoffs? Probably not. I'm probably betting against that, but they are not a pushover team. They've got pretty good goaltending. Vladar and Wolf have both been solid.
Mm-hmm.
They've got enough matchup defenders to make any given night annoying for your top players. They've got a matchup center in Mikael Backlund that guarantees that, you know, whether Backlund's sicked on Miller or Pettersson, that's not a matchup you can take to the bank, period,
mm-hmm.
for at the top of your lineup. And then they've got guys like, if you're not ready to play, Blake Coleman's going to make you look silly. You know what I mean? If you're not ready to match up with Sharon Govich's speed when he's in the lineup, like, he's going to be able to keep his shoulder between you and the puck and set up shop in the offensive zone. If you're not sharp on the PK... they can do damage with the man advantage. They've got guys like Zeri that'll make you look silly if you're not ready for it. They've got some skill. Like, no, that you have to treat the Flames like
a playoff contender.
Like you have to treat the Flames like they're the Kraken. Okay, are they a threat to win the Pacific? Probably not. But are they is there absolutely a world where they're your first round playoff matchup? Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely there is. So you have to treat them seriously. So Lankinen gets Edmonton and Calgary. If you want to spot him if you wanted to spot him the Islanders game, I could see it. But
it's the Bo Horvat return game. But again, the second one.
I think it's the Blackhawks.
I think it's probably the Blackhawks, but there is the Hockey Night in Canada thing to it, right? Like, that's all. I think that does play a role in these decisions.
Yeah, but I mean, so that, and then you get into the question of, do you play your best goalie and secure the 2 points? In which case you go Lankanen, secure the 2 points and hope for the best in the second leg of a back-to-back. Right, because that's like an old school. The old school way of doing it is shoot your best shot against the easier opponent, and then roll the dice and
then
the second
throw Shelovs out against the Preds.
Yeah,
yeah, on the Sunday.
But do you want to give a Predators team that you might be eyeing for some pieces? Like, we've been talking a lot about Canucks trade fits on defense, right? And we get a lot of questions about Lauzon and like Fabro. In the inbox.
Mm-hmm.
But Michael McCarron, 6'5", 57% win rate, right-handed centerman, can play wing. Feel like if you asked Rick Tocchet what's your ideal fourth line center look like, he'd just be like, Michael McCarron, what do you mean? He exists. You know, so like if you can amp up the hurt on the Predators in the early going, like, do it.
It's true.
Do it. Who's more likely to benefit from that anyway than Jim Rutherford?
Yeah, that's a good point.
So, I don't know, man. I just, like, that Blackhawks game, for me, is the one.
By the way, just on the Preds, and I know the Barry Trotz, the rebuild part of it, is getting a lot of attention.
As it should.
The wilder part to me was him saying, what we did in the summer was fantasy hockey until we become a good team. It's like, I know what he's trying to say, but it's like, you know, you made the moves, right? And it's like, that was fantasy hockey. It's like, wait, what? Why did you do it? And I know he's saying like, well, it has to gel, but it's like, I just thought that I've never heard a GM refer to his own moves as fantasy hockey, even provisionally. It's like the moves you just made a few months ago. It's like, oh, it's fantasy hockey stuff.
Yeah.
That's an interesting way of putting it, Barry Trotz.
I mean, look, Barry Trotz, I think, is very, very smart and very, very sharp. And I still think that that team has a ludicrous amount of talent. I think Andrew Brunette's a pretty sharp coach, and I'm sure they'll get it sorted out. At least the problem is, I mean, how deep is the hole for them now? I guess I have to go do the math. But
they have the worst points percentage in the Western Conference.
Yikes. Like, yeah, but it's early enough.
It is. But they are, I mean, they're 6 points out of a playoff spot. And those are the teams they're chasing have played the same number of games.
Yeah.
Like, that's...
It's tough.
It's not great.
No, it's not great. It is very, very not great.
And especially when Edmonton and Colorado are also out of the playoffs. You know what I mean? So it's like, if you assume they're going to find their way into the mix, then you're really counting on a team that's top three in their division at this point. Falling out, and it gets really, really dicey for the Preds at that point.
So they need, if you need 95 points, here's why it's not too late for the Preds, though, okay? Yeah, this is what I meant by I need to do the math, right? Mm-hmm. This is how I always look at it. To get to 95 points, a clip at which no team in the Western Conference, or like at least it's above the historical bar since the league moved to realignment, 93.4 in the West, right? Roughly. So to get to 95 points, they'd need 86 in their remaining 68 games. That's 136 points available. Okay. So they need a 0.625 point percentage. That's 103 point pace. They absolutely have the skill level to do that.
Yep.
There is no world in which what they need to do is well above the true talent level of this roster.
I just think the scarier thing for me is not so much the point pace as it is the like counting spots, because like, okay, Winnipeg, Minnesota, Dallas, Vegas, LA, Vancouver, you'd probably say LA the most likely of those teams to fall out. But like, those are six teams that you feel pretty good about the position they've put themselves to make the playoffs.
Yep.
Right. And then you have Edmonton and Colorado, and you know, maybe Colorado with all the injuries and that are adding up there and the absences, that maybe it doesn't turn around for them, but you'd feel pretty good about betting on them to get into the playoffs.
Have we talked yet on this program about how playing wing with Rantanen and McKinnon is like the Spinal Tap drummer position in hockey? Think about the recent history of it, man. Landeskog, who seems to have had a setback in his injury.
So tough.
Nichushkin.
Yeah.
Drouin.
Yeah.
Then Ross Colton this in the early going, he was like killing it.
Mm-hmm.
It's like,
it's honestly, not ideal.
Yeah, it's like it feels like it should be a dream. Like, you get to play with McKinnon and Rantanen, and it's like, that's the best job in hockey. And it's like, unfortunately, you're now doomed.
Yeah, you're cursed now.
Like, I don't know, man.
You gotta get that John Tavares amulet before you take that job.
Seriously, I feel really bad for them. No, you know what, though? Like, you 102-point pace, it's daunting. I'm not trying to minimize it. But realistically, they need to win, you know, something like 38 of their remaining 68 games.
They are in that space. You're right. But they are all...
It's too early. They're not cooked.
But they're in that space where it's like... They could be cooked in 2 weeks. You know what I mean?
Yes,
if their next
that's right.
two if their next 2 weeks don't go well, it's like, ooh, okay, now you're like really, really up against it.
But again, like when the Oilers hired Knobloch, right? And then they won that first one, but then they dropped two, and it's like, oh, but it's like, no, like, honestly, if you're good and this is a mirage, you have time. But you don't have a lot of it. You're right. The margins are tight here, but you know, we're not talking about them needing to play like a President's Trophy winner. If they play like a credible playoff team, the sort of playoff team I think we thought they were coming into this season, they're going to be fine. They're probably in the wild card as opposed to contending, you know, in the Central the way they, I'm sure, drew it up when they were making fantasy hockey moves.
Yep. When they were assembling their fantasy hockey roster for some reason.
But, but truly, coming into this season, just as an example, Dom Lecision had them projected for 98 points.
Mm-hmm.
So they only have to exceed that by 4 points as a pace the rest of the way.
Yeah. So it, still very
not cooked.
Very
not
possible.
Cooked. Very live.
Again, like a very important couple of weeks coming up for the Nashville Predators. Anyways, just
the bigger issue might just be that they're not playing that well.
100%.
But man, they're also shooting 4.84%. They have a 93 PDO. Yeah, you know what? Nashville Predators are an interesting buy low here. You know what? I'm going to officially do it. I'm going to buy low on the Nashville Predators. I like them to make the playoffs still. I think this is complete noise.
All right.
Yeah.
There you go.
I'm picking them.
All right. Anyways, to tie back into the conversation about the Canucks goaltending, right? So, I mean, we're going through it. And we're talking, you know, maybe the Islanders, one of the games.
Sorry, plus 140 for the Predators to make the playoffs. That's not even spicy.
That's not even that good.
So
yeah.
The market believes.
Yeah, is not ready to punt on it yet.
No, the market believes in the Preds.
So, you know, we're looking at, but we're talking about.
The Flames are plus 280. Yeah. I like the Flames better.
Yeah.
I like
at that
accounting,
number.
Accounting for price, I like the Flames as a hang around team more than I like the Preds. That is weird, but that's where we're at.
So, I mean, we're looking at the 6-game homestand and we're like, one game if they get them the Islanders game for Shelovs, maybe it's two, right? But then at that point you're playing them 2 out of 3, so it might just be like one of the back-to-backs. Of the two back-to-backs against Chicago or Nashville. You know, if it's that Chicago game, I mean, that's like 2.5 weeks since his last start. And the other interesting part of this, as the goaltending situation is concerned, is the progress of Thatcher Demko, right? And, you know, I know Rick Dhaliwal was on with Halford and Brough to say and this morning, and one of the things he had to say was, you know, there's still, quote, one to two things that need to be cleared before Demko can really go all out at practice. And then so you start the clock from there and maybe, you know, conservatively another 10 days after that, at least probably once he starts having really those full participation practices, I would think. So
later this month, early next month.
Yeah. So but could you see, you know, after this 6-game homestand, right, they have 3 days off and then they play Ottawa on the 23rd, back to back Boston and Pittsburgh. The 26th and the 27th, could one of those be at least a possibility? And what I'm starting to wonder is, like, how many more times do we see Shelovs before Demko's ready to go, right? And is, given what we've seen from Shelovs and what we've seen from Lankinen, is carrying three goalies still plan A for this team whenever Demko is in fact healthy and ready to go?
I need to check on it. I don't have like a formal answer for you because I haven't been asking around. And of course, the plan A is to carry three goaltenders. Reporting mostly stems from me, so I should update the record here before suggesting that I know something I don't. The truth of the matter, though, Jamie, is you are right at the end of Brännström's waiver clock here, right? So the ability to do the salary cap gymnastics that the club has relied on to toll space with, I guess it's been Brännström and Baines.
Baines, mostly. And now you have Ratu in that slot. But yeah.
Moving up and down.
Yeah.
Like, that's kind of at an end. You're still going to be able to do it with Ratu, as you noted, but not with multiple guys on the roster. Mm-hmm. And there is no world in which you're placing a player like Brännström, given your usage of him, on waivers at this point. So, well, he wouldn't clear. Like, there's no chance he'd clear.
You need him.
And he's been really, really good. Honestly, the Soucy Myers pair had a really nice road trip. And we haven't talked about it, but it's worth noting that
I thought last night was their best game of the season.
For sure. Yeah. And I think that,
and it's no coincidence that we're sitting here talking like they looked like the most like last year's identity.
Correct.
When that pair has their best night of the season.
Oh man, their team level defensive game has gone up a level. I wonder why. The fact is that you're not going to play games with Brännström. He's too important to what this team is accomplishing in the early going. So, but Shelovs is waiver exempt. So even if you run with three goalies on the roster most of the time, he's probably going up and down to allow you to continue to toll that extra $10,000 in salary cap space that the Canucks have been leaning on when they're at home and settled on non-game days. So,
but you got to get him games, though. Like at the AHL level. You have to get him games at the AHL level.
I would think with how his performance has trended, with how the other Abbotsford goaltenders are performing, I would think he just goes down. But even if he doesn't, and there's a relationship management component to this that is sight unseen, right? Because that's often the case. It's worth noting how long it took to get that deal done in the summer, despite it being one of those relatively straightforward ones, right? So there might be a relationship management component that the club's going to navigate with a level of delicacy that we can't speak to. Right. Because, that's not the sort of thing people talk about publicly.
And, yeah, of course.
And because those are the sorts of considerations that managers have to handle. It's not fantasy hockey unless you're Barry Trotz. sorry, we're not making fun of Barry Trotz.
No, Barry Trotz is awesome. Like, I've never heard a bad word about Barry Trotz. No. Like, I've spoken to players who've played for him who are like, I would love the guy, like my favorite coach ever. He's obviously super smart.
Great to interview.
I've just never heard
Good BC boy.
Like,
yeah, no, we're team Barry Trotz.
100%.
But we're also...
I also just think it's hilarious that he said that.
Well, we also just, like, love fantasy. So it's like, if someone says fantasy, we're like, yeah.
He's our guy.
Anyway.
I like him even more now.
The point being... At some point, it becomes an untenable situation. You're right. He does need to play. They need stable goaltending in Abbotsford. And they need the roster flexibility, most likely, of not carrying three goaltenders when their intention is clearly to ride one guy at the moment.
Yeah.
And when Demko gets back, probably split things up pretty.
Because I think the three goalie plan, it's like, okay, well, we don't want to give Demko a big load, so we'll really reduce his workload, and then we'll split the remainder up between two guys.
Yeah. And we'll ride the hot hand because we don't know, we trust both these guys.
We can't even get Shelov starts with two goalies on the roster. So when are you getting starts even with a limited Demko healthy and on the roster, right? Like, you're not.
And so, I would expect that they'll have to rethink that plan as the circumstances change on the ground, the facts change. Here's the other thing, I've said this a lot, so I'm not going to repeat the checklist of the return to performance side of the Demko thing, where, we don't know if there'll be a performance impact coming back from this injury. We don't know what sort of workload he'll be able to bear off the hop.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know what sort of re-injury risk will be attached to returning from a popliteus injury, and that's because no one's ever had it, right?
Yep.
So, I'm not saying these things to be negative. I'm just trying to identify the contours of where our uncertainty should lie. And in Demko's case, they're almost kind of total.
Yes.
So, Demko comes back. Is he he's not coming back and probably being the number one from a usage perspective for a bit anyway?
No.
Right? Lankinen's probably still going to get.
Well, and I think that's a huge part of the positive Lankinen story.
Totally.
Is that he's bought you the ability, even when Demko is back, you don't feel like you have to, like, okay, you're the starter now. You can really ease him back in.
Well, and then the club's going to also face some decisions over the course of the next 2-3 months where it's like, at what point do you start to ramp Demko up? Because the bar you have to clear, right, isn't can he play every other day, right? It's can he play every other day for 2.5 months,
mm-hmm.
you know, and be the preferred option over a guy who's been 920 across whatever yep. it is, 11 starts so far this season. It's just going to be a really fascinating, not like subplot, but just like a fascinating set of considerations for this organization to manage.
Yeah, and I find these next couple or 2 to 3 weeks, right, as we seem now, barring a setback, and as Dhaliwal was saying, this has obviously not been a linear process for Thatcher Demko, but you can at least start to see the finish line a little bit here, kind of end of this month, maybe early into next month, and it's just going to be really fascinating to see how they manage these next few weeks before they do officially get Demko back and ready to go in goal for the Canucks. Okay, we're going to take a break here. Coming up on the final segment, a couple of good texts that I want to get to about Lucker Mackey potentially getting a call up, about Elias Pettersson as well. So if you have another question, hit us up. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Final segment of Canucks Talk here next on Sportsnet 650. Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drantz, final segment of the week. You mentioned the return to play versus return to performance. I had made a mental note to myself to make a joke about that for my own situation, that I'm back, but will I have returned to performance? I wanted to do that off the top of the show, and I forgot.
Yeah.
So maybe I haven't. Maybe I have not returned to performance.
Crucial distinction.
I'm easing back in.
Yeah,
after as you missing should. Some time.
I think you're killing it, man.
Well, thank you.
I can't tell the difference.
Wait. Uh-oh.
This seems like the top of your game, I'm not going to lie.
This is as good as it gets for you. Like, wait, what? 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. The Bridge Street Dunbar Lumber in Ladner has moved to Progress Way in Tilbury's Industrial Park. More room, more product, more awesome. Details at dunbarlumber.com. As I referenced before we went to break there, a couple of texts I wanted to get into. Erica texts in, if Besser is out for a few games, we do want to stress, right? We don't know what to expect on Besser's health, right? No real update from the team yesterday. We don't know if he's in concussion protocol, anything like that. We'll likely find out tomorrow at morning skate. So we don't know, but I also don't think it's unreasonable to at least speculate about short-term absences and what the team might do.
Yeah, and remember, if you are placed in concussion protocol, it is a multi-day process to clear.
Yeah. So Erica Texan, if Besser is out for a few games, is Lucker Mackey the most likely call up from Abbotsford? And that's an interesting question in and of itself. I think the other way that I was coming at this is obviously Besser holds down a very important spot in the lineup in the top six on JT Miller's wing. He's been very productive so far this year. So not just, okay, who gets the roster spot if, or even the lineup spot if Brock Besser misses a game or two or maybe more, but who gets those top 6 minutes, right? Like, what are the top six options if Brock Besser is missing games here? And, you know, there's some names that jump to mind. I think Lucker Mackey is fair to have in that mix. He's maybe not the favorite to go right into the top six, but you think about the scoring production he's showed already in Abbotsford, the ability to get his shot off. It's an interesting name. I mean, other names that come to mind, Dakota Joshua, if he's ready to return to the lineup here. Nils Höglander, of course. How about Kiefer Sherwood with some of the goal scoring that he's shown early? Daniel Sprong, Ersteed Baines. Like, there's some options that Rick Tocchet would have here. What's your thought on, okay, now it's not going to be one guy necessarily, right? Like, you'll likely see a bit of a committee thing here taking on the minutes that Brock Besser typically plays if he does miss time. But what's your kind of gut tell you about who could stand to benefit there?
Kiefer Sherwood, by the way, the highest points rate, the highest scoring rate forward on the Canucks at the moment, 5-on-5.
Yeah, man.
Okay, so I think there's a lot to unpack here. First of all, the Joshua uncertainty, right?
Mm-hmm.
I would have thought we were seeing him on this road trip. Now, I'm not suggesting that he's behind schedule or what have you. You know, this is not your typical hockey injury that he's trying to return from, right? There are unique considerations when you're talking about a player returning from, you know, a surgical procedure. But I sort of expected him to be part of, you know, one of the games in Southern California, and that has not how it's played out. And, you know, he didn't practice on Wednesday, right? On Wednesday, Tocchet suggested that the club was easing off, right? Like, he'd been pushing it, and they wanted to ease off as he makes his own return to play process or completes that. So, you know, I don't know exactly where Joshua is, but if Joshua's an option, then you probably don't need to call up anybody.
Yes.
Whether he goes into Besser's role or whether or not, you know, you play him on the fourth line in Nils Höglander, who took the spot in Besser's absence during the Kings game last night, goes up to that spot on Miller's right wing, you know, you'd have the body you need to not do a call-up at all. And so that's one side of this anyway. The other side of it would be the things that Besser does and being sort of systemic in how we think about what the club needs if they're trying to replace him, right? So on the one hand, there's a guy, you need a guy who you trust in matchup minutes, yep, playing with JT Miller, probably head-to-head against Connor McDavid, by the way, on Saturday, which is, you know, no mean feat. I mean, that's a hard enough thing to accomplish as it is. And then also, you're going to need someone who can play on the power play, ideally a right-handed shot. Now, I think that's where the Lekkerimäki case becomes really interesting, right? The Canucks power play, I think, shown some signs of progress over the course of the past week, but that's also, I think, us kind of, you know, almost doing that like Pettersson thing.
Lowering
like
the bar.
Yeah, where it's like, he played well, though. And it's
I also think that a lot of the moments where they've looked good is it's been off moments where they've won the faceoff and they haven't had to gain the zone.
Right.
But when they have had to gain the zone, they've still really struggled to do it.
Yeah, I think that's totally fair. So, you know, and losing Besser surely exacerbates our concerns, right?
Yep.
So that's sort of, I think, where the case for Lekkerimäki. So it's like, if Dakota Joshua can't go on Saturday, and we have no idea whether that's in the plan, whether that's mm-hmm. in the cards, but if he can't go Saturday, then you sort of turn to the possibility of needing to call somebody up, or if he can't go, then someone has to get called up. And it yep. can be,
if neither Besser or Joshua can go.
Correct. Yeah. And it can be, you know, it could be just a fourth line guy, for sure. Or it could be someone, you know, who's better suited to actually replacing what Besser can do a little bit more directly, right? And that's where I'll be very curious to see if Lekkerimäki gets a look in that spot, obviously. But I would expect no. Like, I would expect them not to entrust Lekkerimäki to that huge a shot, especially against the Oilers.
Yeah. Now, he could be the call-up.
Yes, he could be the call-up.
But not to go right into that role tomorrow against Connor McDavid.
No, that
right?
seems like a big ask.
Yeah. Although maybe he could still figure into the power play, right? Because, like, that's what I mean. It's not going to be, you're not finding a one-to-one replacement who's going to do everything that Besser does.
No.
Right? Who's going to take his spot next to Miller and his spot on the power play.
Yeah, and that's not a fair spot to put Lekkerimäki in, I don't think. As
no.
well as he's played in the American League. Like, that's not, I think, how you want to introduce him to the NHL, is like, hey, go chase Connor McDavid around.
No, no. But I could see, for example, you know, Lekkerimäki gets called up, is playing maybe, you know, where Hoaglander's playing on the fourth line, and gets limited 5-on-5 minutes, but maybe features on the power play, and Kiefer Sherwood moves up or something, right? Mm-hmm. Or Nils Höglander moves up. Although, I don't know if you want him in that matchup role necessarily, but that at least I could see as a short-term potential solution. I mean, the easiest thing long-term is if Dakota Joshua gets back, or no, I don't want to say long term because we're speculating here, right? But like, if Dakota Joshua is ready to take on his normal minutes load, I mean, that's probably the easiest solution. Is that's a guy Tocchet trusts. You know, you like, he was showed he was able to play top 6 minutes for you in the playoffs. Okay, you put him in there and you go from there.
Yeah, so you just put him with DeBrusk, like DeBrusk plays on the right wing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, sounds great.
That's at least an option.
I'm definitely curious to see it, but is Dakota Joshua, from a return to performance perspective,
that's the
going
question.
To be ready to play top line minutes,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
That feels like a big ask to me.
Very much so.
To be totally honest with you.
Like that feels like you're probably... I mean, okay, he gets back into the lineup, and then how many games before you think you're ready to put that on him? Like, at least 3 or 4.
You'd hope so.
Right?
Yeah.
So, that's already putting us into not next week, but the week after that. So, you know, it's going to be interesting. I mean, man, hopefully, obviously, for a lot of reasons, Besser doesn't have to miss any extended time. Maybe it's just a game or two. Maybe it's no games. Who knows? We'll find out more tomorrow. But, you know, look, they've built a very deep forward group. So it's never easy to replace a player like Brock Besser, even on a very temporary basis.
They do have options,
in the lineup,
though.
But they've got some interesting options.
I mean, option one is Nils Höglander, who looked pretty damn good in a top six role for much of the early part of the season, and who's now sort of bumped back down the lineup and who mm-hmm. replaced Besser's minutes last night and did a creditable job, I thought. I mean, I think there was one play along the defensive half wall where I thought he ended up on the wrong side of the puck, but then it worked out for him anyway. The bounce kind of went in the Canucks' favor, and he was able to earn the clear. So, like, you know, aside from one moment, I thought he was really, really sharp, really good. Two-way game looked great. So, you know, that's a good option. Top scoring recent first-round pick who's absolutely crushing it in the American League. Who also is a right-handed shot and who could credibly be a guy that actually helps you punch up your power play. That appeals to me, too. That's
yep.
very, very good. That's a very good option. Dakota Joshua, if he makes it back, like middle six winger who's got a unique profile, who we've all been watching and saying, hey, we'd love to see what he could do in a bigger role. Maybe, you know, you have to manage whether or not it's too soon, but that's another really strong option. And then you get to, you know, your Daniel Sprong, your Kiefer Sherwood. Like, yeah, this team's got a ton of options, even though none of them actually are, you know, Besser caliber options.
Tyler just brought up in the inbox, Tyler from Coquitlam, an interesting one that I had not considered. He says, if Besser and Joshua can't go tomorrow, is an option not to move up Daniel Sprong on the power play and also call up Phil DiGiuseppe to play with JT Miller. He did well there at points last year. That's from Tyler. That's an interesting one. I'm like a really sure if you're just like, hey, we need someone we trust to throw out there with JT Miller in a tough matchup. We don't want to put that on one of our younger players. We'll move Daniel Sprong up to the power play, which is something I know you've been wanting to see on power play one at points this year as well. Anyways, right? That's kind of an easy fit. I don't think that's likely, but that's an interesting call from Tyler. That Phil DiGiuseppe is still an option in Abbotsford as well. 650, and a lot of people texting in, like Colin from the Caribou, that they'd really love to see Kiefer Sherwood up there. I mean, he's obviously established himself as a fan favorite really, really quickly here with his performance early this season. But somebody else texted in, and, you know, one of the reasons I would be a little reluctant to put Kiefer Sherwood there is just how well that third line is playing. And somebody texted in, can you please talk about Teddy Bluger? I feel like he's been so underrated. Centers the third line last year with Garland and Joshua. It's almost a historically good third line. Nanny takes up center between Heinen and Sherwood, and that line becomes, and he says, quote, inseparable. I don't know if he's quoting you from earlier in the week, but he says, I think that's what you called it. He says, either way, two amazing third lines, common denominator is Teddy.
Maybe I called it indispensable.
I don't know. Anyways, he says, I feel like we don't really say anything about him, not to mention he signed in Van for, I don't know if it was less money or the same that he was making before, but he didn't get a raise. Anyways, and it is pretty impressive that in back-to-back years, they've kind of almost stumbled in. And that makes it sound like there's no intentionality from the coaching staff, so that's probably not giving them credit, but it wasn't first choice in either case, right? This third line configuration. And in back-to-back years, and now this one isn't quite as impressive offensively as what you were getting from Garland and Joshua and Bluger last year, but again, it's two consecutive seasons with two really impressive third lines. And yeah, Bluger was definitely like the third man on that third line last year, because at points it was Suter, and then in the playoffs it was Lindholm playing between them, right? So it was easy to kind of downplay what he was bringing. In this one, Kiefer Sherwood's getting a lot of the attention. He's the new guy. He hits so much. He's very noticeable out there. But Bluger's doing an amazing job playing center for that line. And again, like, not just being your classic, like, okay, cheap, defensively responsible third line center. That line's making plays off the rush. They're doing impressive things off the rush and in the offensive zone.
Yeah, they're producing a lot of offense, which is good because they've kind of been a bit high event from a goals perspective. For whatever reason, that line's had really unlucky, been really unlucky in terms of their on-ice save percentage. It's like sub 900, but they're still in the black because they're generating so much offensively. Look, Bluger should probably be, I think, the early front runner for unsung. You know what I mean?
Yes.
I feel like Sherwood's plenty sung.
Yes. We're going to do the, you're exactly right that in April we were going to have this debate about Kiefer Sherwood, and we're going to make that exact point.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah. But Bluger's the guy who truly no one ever talks about. And yet, when you think about this team's improved penalty killing, right? When you think about this team's, you know, the fact that they lost, like, they lost Elias Lindholm. They lost a $49 million center in free agency, a $50 million plus dollar center in free agency. They signed Bluger to a, you know, bargain 2-year deal, and it's like, yeah, we're fine.
Yep.
Don't even notice it. Third line finding great chemistry. Bluger killing it on the PK. Okay. So, yeah, I mean, that's a pretty impressive accomplishment from Vancouver's Latvian centerman.
Yeah, it's that line's just a ton of fun to watch too,
and yeah, like Sherwood been really good.
Sherwood obviously is a huge part of that, but again, Bluger, like, I've been a huge fan of his game so far this season.
Well, and then, so what do you, I mean, we're also getting to the point where it's like, if we're, you know, knock on wood, we get Besser back soon, or the Canucks get Besser back soon, is Joshua just going in on the fourth line?
You taking Sprong out and putting him there?
Maybe.
So, well, or do you put him in Suter center? That's interesting.
He's
or do you go Joshua? So let's say 13 forwards healthy and up to speed.
Okay.
Okay. I think you go Miller, Besser, DeBrusque.
Okay.
I think you go Pettersson with Garland and Joshua.
Okay.
The third line.
I mean, you know, you've just like spoken my language. This is the plan that I was talking about all summer laid out.
The third line, so Heinen, Bluger, Sherwood, and then Hoglander, Suter, Sprong on your fourth line. I think that's your first choice. You know, knock on wood, everyone's good to go. Everyone can do whatever's asked of them. I think that's your first choice right now.
Yeah, I'm here for it. The only problem is I wonder if Suter needs to be in the top six.
But look, you could say that a lot. Like, Hoglander shouldn't be a fourth line player.
No.
You know what I mean?
But Suter drives, I think, in a way that I don't think a lot of other Canucks players do. You know what I mean? Like, I think that there's a different type of argument for Suter, in that, you know, as like Garland, I thought was excellent. For example, as the first period especially wound down, he had that phenomenal offensive zone shift where he was just all over the ice. But when you put him with Suter, as opposed to Hoglander, and I think Hoglander has the chops to be a play driver in time, just the defensive reliability, the motor, the amount of 50-50 battles that you're winning, as great as Hoglander is at those high energy plays, like, I just think there's a level of polish and reliability that Suter brings that, you know, I wouldn't bump Suter out of the top six. I wouldn't bump him off that line. That line's been great since he joined it.
It's fair, and I think the, like, Joshua needing some ramp up time buys you some time to make those decisions, right? And as we see, things always happen. There's always unexpected things, so you can't count on having, you know, your 13 best forwards all healthy and in perfect shape for long stretches of the season. So you might not need to make some of these really tough decisions all that often. But look, I mean, that's one of the great benefits of having this much depth, is you are put into some of these difficult decisions at different points. By the way, somebody texted it in. Part of me just wants to see the chaos of Sherwood and Joshua on a line together. That would be very fun.
Sounds good.
That would be pretty awesome to see, at least for moments for the Canucks this year. Okay, final few minutes of the show here. And Ken in North Van texted in. And we really haven't talked about Elias Pettersson this show. And, you know, not, I don't think one of the major storylines coming out of last night in particular, but of course, a major storyline of this Canucks season. And Ken in North Van texts in, I work night, so I only get to watch the odd game on TV. It's sometimes it's hard for me to judge how certain players performed, etc. He says, last night I saw Elias Pettersson legit work his butt off along the boards in front of the net, carried the puck with authority and determination. It didn't result in points, but it looked like he has turned a major corner and could be on his way back to normal. I think putting Garland on his wing to drive play has allowed him to simplify his game and get some confidence back. Your thoughts? I agree with part of that, Ken, in that I do think he was working hard, certainly defensively, going to the net. I didn't see as much of the carrying the net with authority, or carrying the puck with authority and determination, as you put it, that you did. And I don't know that I would agree that he's looks like he's turned a major corner. And, you know, this is something that as I was lying in bed, feverish and delirious for much of this week and bored out of my skull, I spent a lot of time thinking about, like, just, and we've spent a lot of time talking about it, just trying to put into words what we're seeing from Elias Pettersson. And so many of the normal hockey cliches about a slump just don't apply here. And even I'm starting to think of things like just saying, like, well, he's lost his confidence. Or, you know, so often you hear like, oh, he just needs to get back to basics and put in effort and that will come. It's like, he's putting in effort. I don't think anybody can credibly watch these games and say he's not trying hard or he's disengaged or anything like that, right? Like, yeah, that's happened with star players where, you know, oh, they're floating out there. They're just not working hard enough. I don't think that's the case with Elias Pettersson at all. He's not getting unlucky because he's not generating that much. And I've been thinking about it, like, the best way I can phrase it, confidence gets close, but I think more to that, more than that, it's like he's forgotten that he's awesome. That's what it looks like to me. Like, he's forgotten that he has the ability to be an elite player, and he's almost playing like a typical middle six player, where it's like, okay, the most important thing for me to do is be physical, be engaged, go to the net, be in the right defensive position. It's like, hey, that's all great. Do that, Elias Pettersson, but there's a whole other part of your game that you're amazing at. And it's almost like he's just forgot about that element, that it exists. And, like, I guess that's confidence, but it almost seems like a different thing to me, where you can't point. It's not like, oh, he's just got to do the little things and he'll get back at it. It's like, he's doing all of those.
Yeah.
And it's not making a difference. And, you know, what have we heard from Rick Tocchet over and over again?
Also,
he's
got to
move
things,
his feet.
The little things. Like, let's not associate a mega contract on the Canucks with the term little things. Come on.
You know, Rick Tocchet, hey, he's got to move his feet. It's like, he's moving his feet. Like, I guess he can always do more of that. But I don't see a lack of motion necessarily out there. It's just like, hey, remember, man, you're a superstar. You're really good. You can do cool things.
Yeah.
And it feels like that's just not part of his thought process right now.
I don't know, man. I don't know. I think you're right. Did you see there was a fan on Instagram who posted a photo of a kid in a Canucks jersey in L.A. with Pettersson? Did you see this?
No.
And I guess the kid had told Pettersson that he was their hero. And Pettersson was like, really?
Okay.
That was like the caption. And I was like, so what?
Doesn't that match up exactly what I'm saying? And he's like, wait, no, I'm just a $2 million third liner. It's like, no, you're not. Like,
you're the man, dude.
You're incredible.
I know. Well, yeah.
Wow. I actually genuinely had not seen that. I'm so happy that happened while I debuted that theory.
Yeah, no, it was a interesting response, right? It's just like, I do think there might be a window into something there, but I don't know, you know?
It's like he got the Men in Black, like, memory erase as he signed the contract. You know what I mean? And they replaced it with, like, you had to work really hard to make the NHL. You make your living off defensively responsible. It's like, no, that's not what you do.
Like, I don't know what the joylessness that there's, it just, like, it just feels joyless. That's how I'd describe it.
Yeah, I think that's fair. It's just a lack of creativity. But I'm at the point now where it's like, I think almost the message, and look, it's such a complicated relationship, I'm sure. Anytime you invest that much in a player and they're struggling, there's so much we're not privy to. But I almost feel like the message has to go the exact opposite way. And instead of being like, hey, just, you know, go out there and work hard, it's like, go out there and try to do something outrageous. Go out there and try to do something that only, like, three other guys in the league can do. Because that's why they paid them out. That's why they paid them the money. Yes, you want your star players to work hard. Obviously, you want them to be really sound away from the puck. You want them to be willing to go to the net. You want them to do all those things. But all that doesn't make them $11 million players, right? You pay them $11.6 million a year because they're capable of doing jaw-dropping things. And I honestly think that's got to be the message to Elias Pettersson. Like, we'll tolerate some defensive slip-ups for the next couple of weeks if you can go out and make some highlights. I know that's completely contrary to the Rick Tocchet school of coaching and how he's built this team. But, like, what do you got to lose at this point? You need to get this guy going here.
Yeah. Ah, you do. This team is not going to reach their ceiling if Pettersson's not going the way he mostly has throughout his career.
Yeah. All right. That does it for us. Great to be back on the show. Drancer is going to be off on Monday. It's a stat holiday, of course, Remembrance Day. But I will be here holding down the fort. And Landon's going to join me. Landon Farrar, of course, is going to join me in studio for an hour as well. So looking forward to that.
And then we'll get a run of shows together.
That's
buddy.
Right. We'll be back together for a little bit here.
Talking to ourselves for one more show next week.
That's right. All right. Enjoy the game against the Oilers. Enjoy the weekend. We're back on Monday here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650.